What is up, you guys? Welcome to this edition of Controversial Thoughts. This week is special. This is my once weekly installment of solo casts. I will often get to do a little monologue, a soliloquy on whatever I think is most interesting. Sometimes they have to do with what I talked about on the podcast this week, and sometimes they don't. I think that the feedback from so many of you has been so intrigued, or at least engaged, with coronavirus that I wanted to really highlight a few of the points that Ivor and I made in the podcast from Tuesday this week at Fundamental Health, which is on the Heart and Soil website. All of our videos are available there. Many of these videos are being censored, or at least a few of them will be censored. So the WHO redefines the word pandemic, position themselves for profit, is metabolic health a risk factor for COVID-19? Crucial COVID-19 update with Ivor Cummins is the hysteria wanted. That is our original podcast. We had a video on YouTube get taken down. The title of it was "The WHO is Science Deniers." Imagine that. That violated the community guidelines, even though we were just talking about science, and I got a strike. So who knows? Got to tiptoe carefully if I'm going to continue to provide content on YouTube. I am being muzzled. Anyway, that's what happens. We'll try and work around it. What are some of the most interesting parts of that podcast from Ira that I really wanted to talk about? I think this goes back to the connections between immunologic disorders, or at least disorders of the immunologic system in connection with metabolic dysfunction. This is the podcast with Tommy Wood that I did a number of weeks ago. You can search Tommy Wood at the Heart and Soil website, and there is a whole section in that podcast on immunometabolism. But the idea is that your metabolism and your immune system are intimately connected. They are not extricable. They are not dissectable. We are a whole being. We cannot balkanize. We cannot silo ourselves into organ systems. This is the problem with Western medicine. We have rheumatologists. We have immunologists. We have orthopedists. We have cardiologists. We have endocrinologists. We have psychiatrists. We have neurologists. We have physiatrists. We have internal medicine docs. We have family medicine docs. We have OBGYNs, and we have GI docs. And everything is connected to everything else. So in the case of immunometabolism, whose realm is that? Is that a psychiatrist's realm? Because it clearly affects the brain and it's going to affect the neurotransmitters. And inflammation in the brain has clearly been linked to worse outcomes for suicide and depression, anxiety, bipolar. That's clearly been shown. I'll do a whole nother podcast on that in the future. Or is it going to affect the GI doc who can show that metabolic dysfunction is going to affect the way that the immune system works in the gut? This is the problem with our current medical formulation, is that by going into specialties and patting ourselves on the back saying, I am a gastroenterologist. Everyone bend a knee. Everyone kowtow and listen to me. I know exactly what is going on with the GI system and everyone else is wrong. Or the cardiologist says, I am a cardiologist. I am therefore the Pope of cardiology and infallible. Or the rheumatologist says, I am the one who has dominion over the inflammatory disorders. Or the immunologist says, wait a minute, this involves T cells and B cells and peripheral mononuclear blood cells. So that's my territory. And everybody's so busy bickering about whose job it is that they can't connect the dots. And that's the problem. There's a lot of turf wars in medicine, and this really kills me. And that's one of the reasons that I don't really think about my specialty anymore. I did my residency in psychiatry. I don't practice psychiatry anymore. I enjoyed learning about mental health disorders. I certainly saw a connection with inflammation, metabolic health, neuroinflammation, neurotransmitters, and the illnesses that claim the most lives of anything in the world that cause the hugest amount of morbidity. Depression and anxiety are clearly the biggest loss of quality of life for Americans. But I think it's more about connecting things, which is why I got board certification in nutrition, really just to be able to defend myself from attacks of those who are petty and seek to say, you don't have a credential. Well, this one's for you guys. Up yours. I've got a nutrition credential now. Don't argue with me about credentials. I've got an MD. I'm a doctoral, I've got an MD. I've got an advanced doctoral degree, and I'm a human being who likes to think outside the box. With all that having said, I'll just say that those people who want to point out credential flaws in anyone else are likely insecure about their own credentials and don't understand that their knowledge is not unique to them. I think it's hilarious when a cardiologist tries to pretend they know everything about cardiology. Well, It's super interesting. And I'm so grateful to the cardiologists who share their information with me because, you know, in medical school, all of that cardiology literature was locked in a section of the basement and you had to have a special key to get down there. And only the cardiology residents could have gone down there. As a psychiatry resident or as an internal medicine resident, I couldn't go down there. During my internal medicine rotations, I couldn't go to the cardiology wing of the hospital and read their books. Of course, I'm being facetious here. All of the literature is available to all of us, whether it's a GI, fiber, cardiology, lipids, all of this discussion about credentials is just pure hogwash. And nobody has unique information. It's all available freely online. And so whether it's a PhD in nutrition claiming that they have more authority to discuss nutrition than me, or a MD with a residency in cardiology who learned essentially no nutrition in cardiology other than plant-based rhetoric, which we know is BS, claiming they have more authority to discuss lipids or diet than me, or somebody on the doctors claiming that they have more authority to discuss nutrition than me because they have a board certification in nutrition, which I now have, the whole thing is ridiculous. Anyway, rant aside, you guys get the point. This is not Hogwarts. You can go and look at any spell you want, anywhere, anytime. The magic is available to all of us, even you, which is why some of the most brilliant minds like Ivor Cummins and many others are engineers who didn't even go to medical school Hogwarts. They didn't even get to use the major magical Horcrux keys to go into the cardiology dungeons and read the cardiology spells. I'm just saying that I snuck into those. That's what I'm going to say from now on. I snuck into the nutrition dungeon at Hogwarts. I snuck into the cardiology dungeon and I read their sacred texts. Anyway, let's talk about metabolic health and immunometabolism. This is really important because as Joe Rogan asked on a recent podcast earlier this week with a guy from Yale, why has there been no discussion of the way that we can modify our immunity with diet, which I believe is the biggest factor, and lifestyle, or sleep, or lower stress? And the guy literally goes, huh, I don't know. That was really disappointing. This supposed expert doesn't know the answer to that question. And I thought Joe asked a very brave question, and I hope he will keep asking that. It's a question that I've been asking, and I wish that I'd asked with him on the podcast many weeks ago, and hopefully we can keep asking those questions in general. Why has metabolic health not been at the forefront? As I spoke about with Ivor on the podcast, there is so much evidence that metabolic health determines COVID outcomes, and as I spoke about with Tommy Wood, that metabolic health determines overall immunologic outcomes with flu, everything else. Every immunologic issue, every infectious illness is related to metabolic health. Don't believe me? Look at this. The impact of obesity and metabolic syndrome on immunity. I've spoken about all these references in the past, guys. They're in the show notes from the Tommy Wood episode. So basically what it says, obesity is associated with metabolic disturbances that cause tissue stress and dysfunction. Obese individuals are at a greater risk for chronic disease and often present with clinical parameters of metabolic syndrome, insulin resistance, those are essentially synonymous, systemic markers of chronic low-grade inflammation, again, synonym. It has been well established that cells of the immune system play an important role in the pathogenesis of obesity and metabolic syndrome-related chronic diseases evidenced by leukocyte activation, dysfunction in metabolic tissues such as adipose tissue. I've been talking about that a lot recently, and I'm going to talk more about adipose tissue in the podcast coming out on Tuesday with Peter from Hyperlipid, liver, pancreas, and the vasculature. Oh, is that important for anything like cardiovascular disease, or fatty liver, or insulin synthesis for things like diabetes? However, recent findings have highlighted the substantial impact that obesity and metabolic parameters have on immunity and pathogen defense. Oh, could we insert coronavirus here? I'll say it's SARS-CoV-1 so I don't get censored, but you could also include whatever number you want after SARS-CoV. I'm not talking about SARS-CoV-2. That would not be responsible. And the community guidelines on YouTube would allow me to get censored, but I might be. Fact checkers, up to you. Including the disruption of lymphoid tissue integrity, alterations in leukocyte development, phenotype and activity, and the coordination of the innate and adaptive immune responses. If you don't know what those are, go back to the podcast with Tommy Wood. The innate is kind of the first line of immune response. It's the dendritic cells, the macrophages, the NK cells, the adaptive immune cells or T and B cells, which respond later on. So innate and adaptive, first line, second line. These changes are associated with an overall negative impact on chronic disease progression, immunity from infection, vaccine efficacy. We would never question the efficacy of any vaccine. Anyway, you guys can read this review. It's quite clear. There are so many studies. Many of these are in animals, but here I have highlighted those that are in human subjects and show alterations in immune phenotypes looking at cytokines, which is the immunologic milieu. These have to do with vaccine failures, tetanus failure, influenza failure, increased risk, influenza-related complications and hospitalizations in diabetic, obese, and overweight children, respectively, or reverse respectively. You can look at this on the YouTube video or hardensoil.co. Type 2, hemodialysis patients, diabetics, increased risk, hepatitis V vaccine failure. So as I have spoken about with many in the past, will the vaccine be as effective for those who are in most need? I doubt it. It's a complete sham. It's a Band-Aid. No vaccine will give anyone immunologic health because no vaccine will give them metabolic health, which is driving immunologic dysfunction. So that is a great study to start with. I will move on to the next study, which again, all of these are in the podcast with Tommy Wood. The relationship between the neutrophil, lymphocyte ratio, and insulin resistance in newly diagnosed type 2 diabetes mellitus patients. This is essentially looking at innate, adaptive, imbalance. You can look at neutrophils, you can look at lymphocytes, and the NLR ratio as it goes up is associated with a higher rate of immunologic or insulin resistance. You can see here the p-value is less than 0.001. The 95% confidence interval for the logistic regression analysis independently associated with IR is 4.27 to 12.223. Pretty freaking open and shut case. Metabolic syndrome creates immunologic dysfunction. The media has not talked about this. You can calculate your neutrophil lymphocyte ratio. You can do that by looking at your absolute neutrophils or your absolute lymphocytes or the percentage of your neutrophils over the percentage of your lymphocytes, but do it when you're healthy. Last paper on this topic, the NLR3P3 inflammasome, the role in metabolic disorders and regulation by metabolic pathways. This is an immunologic inflammasome, which is a collection of multimolecular protein complexes that is connected with metabolism. And what we know from this paper, which references many others, during the chronic development of obesity, multiple changes occur, such as the growth of adipocytes. You guys have heard me talk about that. The growth of adipocytes getting to the point where they are overly distended, they are hyperplastic and not hyperplasia, right? It's a hyperplastic adipocyte. It's a fat adipocyte, not an overly divided adipocyte. And when the adipocyte can no longer do secrete adipokines, which lead to adipocyte dysfunction, it gets overly distended. And that appears to be the inciting event for systemic insulin resistance or systemic metabolic dysfunction. Again, podcast on Tuesday coming part two with Peter from Hyperlipid. If this is all complex, there's lots of podcasts that go into all of this, but the high level is that at a molecular level, or I should say at a cellular level, one of the things we observe histologically, microscopically, is that when your fat cells become overly distended, when your adipocytes become dysfunctional, they can no longer divide, which means they are no longer able to secrete adipokines, which lead to adipocyte division, that is adipocyte hyperplasia. There are all sorts of inflammatory things that happen, increased free fatty acids, and systemic metabolic dysfunction occurs. It's not easy to think about this, but it is worth your time because the case is very well supported by the evidence. And as I've talked about with Ben Bickman, and as I will talk about with Peter from Hyperlipid, what do you think causes your adipocytes to grow? What do you think? Could it possibly be oxylipins? It could be. There's actually good evidence for that. It's one of the things I mentioned with Tucker Goodrich. We're trying to fill in all the dots here, but the oxidative products of linoleic acid metabolism do appear to impair adipocyte division and normal adipocyte function. I've spoken about these literature pieces in much detail in the past, but I will bring one up here just to show you guys one reference. To substantiate this, I'll start with this one. Loss of white adipose hyperplastic potential is associated with enhanced susceptibility to insulin resistance. This is hyperplasia when the fat cells are dividing. So there is reduced adipogenesis, and that is associated with insulin resistance. Now, there's really no question that impaired adipogenesis in obesity associated insulin resistance and type 2 diabetes happens. You guys can go through this long book chapter, but there are many diagrams like this, looking at mesenchymal stem cells, pre-adipocytes, adipocytes, signaling of WISP2, et cetera, BMP4, and on. I won't get into it today. Finally, I will show you guys one of the more interesting articles, which I believe ties these two together. There are many here, too much for any particular podcast, at least not this one. The role of physiologic levels for hydroxynonadienol on adipocyte biology, implications for obesity and metabolic syndrome. The aim of the current study was to determine if chronic repeated H&E exposure and acute effects of physiologic concentrations of H&E towards multiple adipocyte aspects of biology using differentiated 3T3L1 adipocytes. Our studies demonstrate that acute and repeated exposure of adipocytes with physiologic low concentrations of H&E is sufficient to promote oxidative stress, impaired adipogenesis, alter expression of adipokines, increase lipolytic gene expression, and increase free fatty acid release. Well, the only piece missing there is that increased consumption of linoleic acid in your diet leads to increased levels of 4-HNE. And I think there's some good studies which suggest that as well. So anyway, that I find quite fascinating. We're linking it all back to the notion of immunologic health, immune health, why no one is talking about this. One of the other really fascinating things that I came across this week was something else that no one is talking about, which is supplementation with colostrum. Actually, I saw this as an article on Mercola and its relationship to flu vaccine efficiency or efficacy. So as we're moving into flu season now, many of you will be thinking about getting a flu vaccine. And though I must say I am biased, we are releasing an ImmunoMilk grass-fed, grass-finished colostrum at Hardened Soil. I'm super excited to share this with you guys because of this type of research. So this is the first paper that you guys can review, Colostrum and its Benefits to Review. It's a nutrient-rich fluid produced by female animals, loaded with immune growth factors, tissue repair factors, significant quantities of complement components that act as a natural antimicrobial agents, actively stimulate the maturation of an infant's immune system. All kinds of things here. Colostrum has remarkable muscle, skeletal repair, and growth capabilities. Studies have shown it is the only natural source of two major growth factors, namely TGF, transforming growth factors alpha and beta. So TGF, alpha and beta, and IGF-1 and 2. Now, people will say that, oh, you don't want to get too much IGF-1. Yeah, don't overdo IGF-1. But if you need repair, sometimes you can use these in a very positive way for healing. And I think that for most of us, this is just fine. These growth factors have significant muscle and cartilage repair characteristics. They promote wound healing with practical implications for trauma and surgical patients. Colostral growth factors have multiple regenerative effects that extend to all structured cells of the body, such as the gut. Pretty cool stuff. Again, dairy, is it for everyone? If you react to casein or whey, be careful with this. You may not tolerate colostrum. If you do fine with dairy, try it. It could be very helpful for your gut, for muscle repair. And as these studies show, it might even be just as effective. Again, these are small studies, but these small studies, which are controlled, say it's just as effective, if not more effective, than flu vaccination in preventing flu over the course of a winter. Maybe grandma needs some ImmunoMilk if grandma tolerates dairy. So check these studies out, guys. Again, I'll talk about these in more detail in the future. Prevention of influenza episodes with colostrum compared with vaccination in healthy and high-risk cardiovascular subjects. The epidemiologic study in San Valentino. So this is a two-month treatment with oral colostrum in prevention of flu episodes compared with anti-influenza vaccination was evaluated. This is a little misleading. They're calling it epidemiology, but there was an intervention here. This is interventional epidemiology. Broadly, I use the term epidemiology in a pejorative sense. A lot of times I'm talking about observational epidemiology, and allow me to make it clear that I'm skeptical of that observational epidemiology because it is confounded by healthy and unhealthy user bias. You can't just make it black and white and say, Paul doesn't think epidemiology is valuable. That's putting words in my mouth, though it's been done by many. It's not the first time, not my first rodeo. So 2 month treatment with oral colostrum in prevention of flu episodes compared with anti-influenza vaccine. Groups included healthy subjects without prophylaxis, those receiving both vaccination and colostrum. 3 months follow-up, the number of days with flu was 3 times higher in the non-colostrum subjects. The colostrum group had 13 episodes versus 14 in the colostrum plus vaccination group, 41 in the group without prophylaxis, and 57 in the non-treated subjects. Part two of the study, they had a similar protocol with 65 patients who were very high-risk cardiovascular subjects, all had prophylaxis. The incidence of complications and hospital admission was higher in the group that relieved only a vaccination compared with colostrum groups. Colostrum in both healthy subjects and high-risk cardiovascular subjects is at least three times more effective than vaccination to prevent flu and is very cost-effective. We have to be careful about statements like that, but I will show you the data. So they compare it all here. You can look at details of the healthy evaluation group, included completes, dropouts, evaluation of parameters, details. And here you will see events, subjects, dropouts, flu episodes less than 2 months, flu episodes in 3 months, days of disease in 3 months, no prophylaxis, vax plus colostrum, and vax. You can see colostrum looks pretty good. Again, how many? 37, 41, 23, 36. Is there age parity in all these groups? We'd have to go back and make sure. We can do that above. But when I looked at this, it looked reasonable to me. Details of high-risk study subjects, female, male, more females than male, vax plus colostrum. There's more females and males in every group. Colostrum, vax, included, completed, dropouts, events. Vax had the highest percentage, hospital admissions, and you can see the differences. So if you want to know about age parity, you can go up and look here at what they give as the treatment groups and their ages and stuff. But in general, that's how we evaluate the studies to make sure it's all reasonable. And is it a perfect study? No, but it's pretty intriguing. And then there's another abstract where they combine colostrum with bifivir, which is a probiotic. And they found that the efficacy of a colostrum in association with the immunomodulator bifivir, which is a probiotic, in the prevention of flu episodes. What they found? The episodes in the vaccination plus immunomodulators and immunomodulators only group were significantly lower with the other two groups. Number of episodes registered with the immunomodulators was significantly lower than those observed in patients using vaccination or no prevention. Number of days with disease was higher in untreated controls compared with the groups treated with immunomodulators. Average relative costs were significantly lower in the immunomodulator groups, that is the colostrum, the bifivir. Basically what they're saying is that bifivir, probiotics, or colostrum seems to work pretty darn well compared to a flu vaccine in many conditions, many situations, even better. So more on this to come. I'm going to do a whole controversial thoughts video next week on dairy. Full disclosure, Heart and Soil is releasing ImmunoMilk in the next 2 weeks. We've got an encapsulation now. We're super excited about this. It's mostly A2 grass-fed, grass-finished colostrum, and it's from grass-fed. I said that, finished cows in New Zealand. It's going to be amazing. And I think for those that tolerate dairy, it's going to be a great addition to your regimen. In terms of other Heart and Soil updates, check us out at heartandsoil.com. If you have questions about product recommendations, you can always email me, drpaul@heartandsoil.co. I'm also happy to help you there with dietary construction, but I cannot be your doctor there. I can't read your labs. That is outside of the scope of my practice. We're working really hard to get beef organs, bone marrow and liver, heart of the warrior back. It's going to happen in the next few weeks. I apologize if I overpromised and underdelivered. It's definitely happening in the next few weeks. We've had problems with production. You can't grow cows overnight, especially not grass-fed, grass-finished cows, but the organs are on their way. We are getting them to you guys ASAP. In a few weeks, we are going to be in a much better position. A lot of these supplements are going to be limited release because we're going to have a limited supply, but we're going to get them to all you guys who can benefit from them, and then we're going to get them back in stock as soon as possible. We're so glad and grateful and really just, you know, feel blessed to be able to do this work. We feel blessed that we believe in this and that you guys are benefiting from what we do, that you're getting more no-till nutrition in your life, which is something that I believe is really lacking from modern human nutrition and is one of the ways that we reclaim our ancestral birthright to radical health. You guys know I say that all the freaking time. It's part of the remembering. So anyway, thanks for listening to this episode of Controversial Thoughts. Check us out, heartandsoil.co. Check out ImmunoMilk. You can put your name in there to be notified when it's available very soon. Look at that stuff regarding immunologic connections with the metabolism and simplify it and show it to someone in your life who's metabolically unhealthy and doesn't think that affects their susceptibility to COVID, because it absolutely does. There will continue to be no media discussion of this and I don't know why. Instead of social distancing or whatever, in addition to social distancing and masks, if you believe those are valuable, though Ivor presents data they're not, let's just not be controversial. Why don't we make junk food illegal? Why are we still selling crappy things like seed oils in the grocery store? Why are we still giving people high fructose corn syrup? That would be the major intervention. Liquor stores are open. Strip bars are open. Alcoholics Anonymous is closed. Anyway, priorities are crazy. We're getting too political. The issues become crazy politicized. I'm not going down the rabbit hole. Mainly what I care about is your health, the health of your family, and how you can really reclaim that ancestral birthright to radical health by eating like your ancestors, not your overweight, obese doctor. Maybe you have a doctor that's amazing, in which case they should email me because I respect them. High five to them. Chances are your doctor doesn't connect the dots because they went to school at Hogwarts and they didn't read the cardiology literature because they couldn't get into that part of the basement because I snuck in there. They didn't read the cardiology spells like me, but I'll tell them what I found in the cardiology spells and we'll share the information because silos, balkanization of medical specialty hurts us, appeals to authority are silly, and onward. Stay radical, you guys. Thanks for being a part of the remembering.